This remote hearing at the Capital Investment Committee for March 11th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01, and it's being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Lencheski, please take the roll.
Members, you may unmute yourself when your name is called. Representative Fu Lee.
Lee, present.
Representative Fu Lee, present. Representative Mary Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Representative Mary Murphy, present. Representative Dean Erdahl.
Erdahl, present.
Representative Dean Erdahl, present. Representative Esther Abaje.
Abaje, present.
Representative Esther Abaje, present. Representative Kayla Berg.
Present.
Representative Kayla Berg, present. Representative Greg Davids.
Davids, present.
Representative Greg Davids, present. Representative Keith Franke.
Frankie, present.
Representative Keith Franke, present. Representative Mike Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Mike Freiberg, present. Representative Rick Hansen.
Rick Hansen, present.
Representative Rick Hansen, present. Representative John Hewitt.
Present.
Representative John Hewitt, present. Representative Leon Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Leon Lilly, present. Representative Eric Lucero.
Present.
Representative Eric Lucero, present. Representative Rena Moran.
Present.
Representative Rena Moran, present. Representative Nels Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Nels Pearson, present. Representative Donald Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Donald Raleigh, present. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen, present. Representative Liz Ryer.
Ryer, present.
Representative Liz Ryer, present. Representative Nolan West.
West, present.
Representative Nolan West, present. Representative Jay Zhang.
Here.
Representative Jay Zhang, present. Members, at the conclusion of the roll call, please mute your devices. A quorum is present.
Thank you, Mr. Lencheski. A quorum is present. Representative Murphy, do you move approval of the minutes for March 9th?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the minutes for March 9th as printed.
Representative Murphy moves approval of the minutes for March 9th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and minutes for the March 9th meeting is approved. Today we will hear several bonding bills on an informational only basis. Again, each author has one testifier and have been allotted 7 minutes for their presentation. These bonding bills are related to housing, child care, and public safety issues. First up, we have Representative Liz Olson, House File 414. Please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Glad to be here with you all. So I don't think it's a surprise to any of us that there's a child care shortage in our state, and it's having a huge impact in Greater Minnesota. Between 2000 and 2020, Greater Minnesota lost more than 20,000 child care slots, which is a 17% decrease. The metro area lost 2,688 slots, which is a 2% decrease. Currently, Greater Minnesota lacks more than 39,000 child care slots based on our current workforce needs. Using these numbers to address the 39,000 missing child care slots in Greater Minnesota, it will require at least $120 million in capital if we expand capacity by increasing family license slots by 60% and child care center slots by 40%, which is the current ratio of existing child care slots in Greater Minnesota. The problem is child care providers in Greater Minnesota cannot access private commercial capital, because it is almost impossible to design a childcare business that generates enough revenue to cover operating expenses, wages, and capital expenses. House File 414 provides $10 million in funding from the sale of state general obligation bonds into the Greater Minnesota Child Care Facilities Grant Program. This grant program was established in the fall in the bonding bill, but did not receive any funding. The bonding bill created two separate accounts for this program, one funded from general fund and one funded through the bonding committee. House File 414 provides funding for the bonding funded account, at a separate bill, House File 411, which provided funding from the general fund account. The purpose of the Greater Minnesota Child Care Facility Capital Grant Program is to keep or enhance or expand or create new economic development in the area in which the grants are made by providing facilities for the child care necessary to support workers and their families. Eligible applicants include, because these are GO bonds, eligible applicants are limited to local government, city, county, or school district, or a joint powers board established by two or more cities, counties, or school districts. Eligible projects could include acquiring land or an interest in land, pre-design, design, renovation, construct, furnishing, or equipping facilities, or other child care facility improvements that support the purpose of which this grant program is established. Money from the account is in the general fund may also be used to upgrade or expand existing non-child care facilities. Projects examples, a city could turn a vacant building on Main Street into a child care facility. A county could add a child care facility onto an existing county nursing home. A school can convert underutilized space in an existing school building into a child care center. In all three of these examples, the local government could run the child care facility, but more often they would lease the space to a licensed child care provider. And House File 414 requires a 50% local non-state match. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have one testifier, Scott McMahon with the Greater Minnesota Partnership.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. McMahon. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 414, and I want to thank Representative Olson for offering this important legislation. My name is Scott McMahon, and I am the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. The partnership is a collaboration of business, government, and community leaders from across Greater Minnesota who support public policies and investments that promote economic prosperity throughout our region. There's a great quote that says, "Child care is the business that allows other businesses to be in business." Every business across the state is built on a foundation of 20, 30, and 40-year-olds committed to seeing that business succeed. But if those employees cannot access childcare when their lives require it, then the business cannot maintain its workforce, grow, and succeed. And as the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank has noted, families need access to childcare in order to participate in the post-pandemic economic recovery. But in Greater Minnesota, we lack almost 40,000 childcare slots, which means we only have 66% of the slots we need. And as a result, we have thousands of job openings, jobs with good pay and good benefits that go unfilled because our employers cannot recruit the workforce they need because their community lacks childcare openings. In order to build out new capacity to shrink that 40,000 childcare slot deficit, our childcare providers and entrepreneurs need access to capital. Based on the analysis that Representative Olson had indicated, we need at least $120 million in capital and startup funds to eliminate our 40,000 childcare slot shortage. The problem is the providers cannot access that capital. But we have seen success stories of new centers opening in our communities, and every time this happens, it is because the local community has been able to come together and create public-private partnerships to provide the capital needed to build the center. And the childcare centers in these examples work because, as one center director told me as she was trying to start a second center in her city, "I can generate enough revenue to pay my staff or pay my mortgage, but I can't do both." The Greater Minnesota Child Care Facilities Grant Program would provide financing to local communities to build new capacity either by building new space, rehabilitating existing space, or repurposing space for a city, county, or school district to lease to a child care provider or to operate as a child care center themselves. These examples where we're repurposing existing space is the lowest capital cost option for expanding child care slots because it is focused on converting existing space, which is readily available in every one of our communities, rather than building new. The financial impact of this program to our child care providers is that they can remove the capital expense from their balance sheets, allowing them to focus their revenues on their operations and making it so that they can, in fact, operate sustainable operations. The investment contained in House File 414 provides $10 million in public financing to be leveraged against at least an additional $10 million in private financing. And this leveraging is real. In Wilmer, a recently opened child care center leveraged a $50,000 state grant from DEED against more than $800,000 in local funds. And a $110,000 grant in Mora leveraged almost $1 million in local contributions. In most, if not all communities, the match that's required in this bill will far exceed the one that's required. The investment has the potential to reduce Greater Minnesota's child care shortage by more than 15%, with child care slots that are sustainable and that provide the wages needed to maintain the child care workforce. I simply cannot state how impactful and how much of a game changer this investment will be in our communities. This type of capital financing simply is not available to our child care providers, and it is exactly the investment we need to eliminate the shortage. Thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to thank Representative Olson for bringing this bill forward and echo the words of Mr. McMahon and Representative Olson in the importance of this. You've heard me say many times, and I'll probably repeat it more in the future, but we cannot bring people out to work in Greater Minnesota if they don't have places to live and daycare to take care of their children. And so for the workforce of Greater Minnesota, I think this is a very important bill, or it's important that we do more regarding child care in Greater Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Olson, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think Representative Erdahl actually wrapped that up very nicely. So thanks for members' consideration of this important bill.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Next up on the agenda is Representative Hamilton, House File 430. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's great to be here. And thank you for hearing House File 430, members of the committee. What this does is it establishes a grant program used for public infrastructure capital costs. There would be a 50% local match to these grants. And again, this could be used, these dollars could be used for sewer, water, utilities, streets, specifically to public infrastructure. Mr. Chairman, I know you have an extremely busy schedule today. I do have with me a testifier, Mr. Drew Hagee from the city of Windham. And if we can turn it over to our testifiers, please.
Mr. Hagee, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Drew Hagee, Executive Director for the Windham EDA. Thank you, Chairman and committee members. I wanted to touch base on this. When you're looking at new housing projects in Minnesota, specifically in Greater Minnesota and smaller communities, lots of times the infrastructure costs are greater than what the lot is worth after you're done developing the lot. So what you have into the lot for acquiring the property, sewer, water, other infrastructure, there is still a gap. When you're looking at filling that gap, there's several ways that cities have been looking at it. This would be a nice tool for cities. Being able to utilize some grant funds. Other examples of how cities have been doing this is in Windham. We're utilizing a redevelopment TIF district and pairing together multifamily with single family, since multifamily has a higher tax base. That's only possible if you have access to be able to set up the redevelopment TIF district and if you have opportunity to pair together single family with multifamily. Other cities in Southwest Minnesota looked at other options. Worthington utilized general fund reserves that they had from their electric fund and then also from the sale of their hospital. So if they had reserves that they were able to put into a new housing subdivision, that works. But again, you may not have that be a tool. The city of Slayton bonded and then utilized some general fund dollars to help their project move forward. But again, now you have general fund dollars going into a subdivision for a project. But each one of those examples, there is a gap. And when you're looking at that gap, this is one nice way to fill that. Specifically in Windham, we've been working on a number of different housing projects here, looking at job growth. High Life Foods Windham has created 980 new jobs in Windham area since 2017. Toro has created 200 new jobs since 2018, and they're at 950 employees. So our two largest employers are doing very well, and High Life specifically are busing people in from as far away as Mankato, which is over an hour away. So this is a high priority for Windham to support our existing businesses as they grow, and it is a critical part of filling that funding gap. So as we look at different options, this is something that it would be a nice tool to be able to fill that funding gap. And I can answer any kind of questions you have in regards to the program or also housing in Windham.
Seeing no members' questions, Representative Hamilton, any closing comments?
Mr. Chairman, I too would just refer back to Representative Dean Erdahl's closing remarks because he covered it very well. We need to make sure that we have access to programs so that we can build not only child care, but houses as well out in rural Minnesota, greater Minnesota. So I would simply ask for your support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Next up is Representative Ryer, House File 1599. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and committee members. I'm very happy to introduce House File 1599 today. This project stood out to me as a priority for a couple of reasons. First, it's great for our community to complete this part of the trail system. I can vouch for that as a user. And by the way, this is the Minnesota River Greenway trail link. So I've ridden down Highway 13 many times to get on that trail. I've done a lot of road biking, so it's okay for me. But many people are not comfortable with that, and I would never want to see families with kids resorting to it. It's simply not safe. And its importance goes far beyond our local area to encompass the regional trail system as a whole. We're so close to filling the gaps, and this particular stretch from Cedar Avenue to roughly 494 in Egan is a key hub that opens up the system to people across the region. This project addresses both access and safety, and for those reasons, I think it's an excellent investment with broad regional value. With that, I'd like to welcome our testifier, Dakota County Commissioner Lori Halverson, to tell us more about the project.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Halverson. Please identify yourself and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am Lori Halverson, Dakota County Commissioner, and joining me today is BJ Battig, who is Dakota County's Manager of Risk and Homeland Security. This project is really a safety project, and so any questions that you have about the safety improvements, Mr. Battig can answer in questions. I do want to thank you all for taking the time to consider Dakota County's bonding request of this $5 million that addresses serious public safety issues, mobility barriers, and fills in a critical gap in the Minnesota River Greenway. The Minnesota River Greenway is a 17-mile corridor following the Minnesota River from Burnsville to St. Paul. It is a significant regional and state benefit because this particular part of the Greenway connects Dakota County and the South Metro to Fort Snelling State Park, to the Minnesota Valley National Refuge, and to the Metro Regional Park Trail System. It is something that is used a lot, and I don't have to tell any of you that in COVID, a lot more people have discovered this trail. And as Representative Ryer stated, in order to navigate this trail currently, you have to jump onto a highway that is narrow, that does not have shoulders, and is quite a windy road and is not navigable for most bikes. The scope of the project itself is 3.5 miles. Of paved trails. It includes a boardwalk, and most importantly, it includes a railroad overpass to provide grade separation for bikes and pedestrians from rail traffic. And this project mitigates one of the highest priorities of public safety within Dakota County and our regional trails greenway system. The bonding request includes a grade separated crossing of the Union Pacific Main Line, which ensures that regional trail users are separated from high-speed rail. The crossings assure that people of all ages and all abilities have safe and accessible trail routes. The project also completes a key gap in our Dakota County Regional Greenway System. This current trail gap contributes to trail users needing to use Highway 13, which is unsafe. And closing this gap provides the system connectivity and a safe route that separates pedestrians and bikes from roadways and railroad crossings. The completion of the Minnesota Regional Greenway, Fort Snelling segment, also provides a trail continuity for 28 miles beginning from Burnsville and connecting to the Mississippi River Greenway, ending in Invergrove Heights. It serves as a key commuter connection to Minneapolis and St. Paul. I know a lot of bike commuters who use this to get to work. The total cost of the project is $11.6 million. The county is leveraging $1.89 million along with federal grant money of over $3 million, met council grants of over $1 million. And of course, we're hoping to leverage state bonding dollars in order to make this project happen this year. With the bonding, the project is ready to build this year. The land control is in place and the railroad agreement is improved. So we are ready to go, in other words. In summary, I'd really love to thank everybody for your time and attention and your consideration of this bonding project for safety improvements on the Minnesota River Greenway and connection to the Fort Snelling segment. Thank you very much. And Mr. Baddick and I are available for any questions.
Seeing no members' questions, thank you, Commissioner Halverson. And any closing comments, Representative Ryer?
Thank you, Chair Lee. I'll echo Commissioner Halverson's request for consideration on this. It's a key linchpin for our entire regional system, a health and safety and community benefit. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ryan. Next up is Chair Stevenson, House File 160. Welcome to the committee. Chair Stevenson, I understand that you have the H0160-A1 amendment for reference. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, members of the committee. This bill, and do we want to adopt the amendment now, Mr. Chair, or do you want just
to? It's only for reference. We're not going to take official action.
Great. Well, I'll just tell the committee that the amendment is, I think, the kind of amendment that I'm sure this committee loves to see because it drops the price tag on the project nearly in half. So I think that's reason enough that you should all be thrilled about my project. This project relates to a pedestrian bridge in Coon Rapids, over Coon Rapids Boulevard. And it's a very important bridge for a couple of reasons. One, it has regional significance because it connects a couple of very significant trail systems, including the Mississippi River Regional Trail that runs all the way into the city and much further north. And then from the Coon Rapids Dam extends, using this trail connection, you'll be able to get up into the northern part of Anoka County, Bunker Lake Trail system up there. It also is an area where the city has been engaged in a lot of redevelopment. There's a housing project being built right there that will, you know, hopefully attract a lot of young families. On the other side of this busy road is a park and Lily Putt, which is a mini golf place. And so I'm always concerned about kids going back and forth across that road. But in all seriousness, there's a safety consideration here, and we did have a fatality at this intersection, a pedestrian fatality 2 years ago. The project was included in this committee's capital investment bill in the past, and I'm hopeful it will be again. Mr. Chair, I do have a testifier who can provide more information.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Fanilius. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grant Fernelius. I am the Community Development Director for the City of Coon Rapids and appreciate the opportunity this morning to speak on behalf of Representative Stevenson's bill. I have just a real quick PowerPoint presentation with some bills. I think sometimes it's helpful to actually see the project that we're talking about. So if I can share that, I'd like to do that at this time.
Please proceed.
As Representative Stevenson mentioned, this project is located in the city of Coon Rapids. I have a map on the left-hand side of the screen, which shows the location of this project relative to...
Mr. Fernandez, we don't have the map that you're referring to. Okay. Your presentation is not up.
I have it up in front of me. Can everyone see it at this point?
We don't see it, and so in the interest of time, you could just proceed.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to, provide some support for this bill in terms of the importance of the project. As Representative Stevenson mentioned, this bridge provides an important link across Coon Rapids Boulevard. Coon Rapids Boulevard is a fairly heavily traveled roadway in Coon Rapids. We have over 31,000 vehicles per day that use that roadway, and so it's a busy roadway. It's a six-lane local county roadway, and so it's not really safe to cross for pedestrians. And so this particular bridge, I think, is is very important for pedestrian and bicycle safety. I will also add briefly that there are over 3 million users of the Anoka County Park System, and of that, 120,000 users of the Coon Creek Regional Trail. So it's not simply Coon Rapids. There are a lot of people in Anoka County and also in Hennepin County to the west of us, Brooklyn Park, Champlin, who will use this trail system as well. And having this linkage, I think, would be extremely important. As Representative Stevenson mentioned, both the city and Anoka County have invested heavily in adjacent infrastructure, over $10 million in both the reconstruction of Coon Rapids Boulevard, which actually is now complete. So this bridge would be kind of the final piece of this project, as well as close to $50 million of private investment in our Port Riverwalk area. A private developer is building some townhomes there. So we're very excited about that project. The last piece that I wanted to mention in terms of why state funding is that the Coon Creek Regional Trail actually connects to the Mississippi River Trail, which is a statewide bike system. And so it's an important part of our overall statewide system, and we think that this project really enhances the potential use of that as well. And last thing, as Representative Stevenson mentioned, is the leveraging. Really, the state's contribution towards this project would be about a third. The city has already secured a regional grant through the regional solicitation that will cover half of it. The city will contribute roughly 20% of the cost. So really, I think it's a great opportunity for the state to leverage those resources for a project that has, statewide benefit. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Finelius. And seeing no members' questions, Representative Stevenson, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It is a great project. I hope it earns your support. The last thing I would mention is the North Metro Mayors Association supports this, so there is some regional buy-in to the idea as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Next up is Chair Hausman, House File 1634, the first engrossment. Please proceed, Chair Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is part of the Homes for All agenda that I'm bringing to you today. House File 1634 asks for $500 million in bonds toward the development and preservation of affordable housing around the state. The request truly impacts the entire state. Many communities are struggling with housing needs. While the needs vary from community to community, one thing is clear: we do not have enough housing that people can afford, especially for our state's lowest earners. In the past few years, housing stability and the need for continued investments has gained traction. But as we all know, for far too long, housing has been underfunded at every level of government. Housing investments through bonding have been Minnesota's largest source of investment since 2014, since they were first created. And I'm encouraged by the recent consistent investment in housing the past few years, but we can't stop now. This request incorporates $100 million to support preservation and safety upgrades to publicly owned housing, 21,000 units around the state. Repairs to these properties are absolutely crucial because in many smaller communities, publicly owned housing is the only affordable housing. If we lose it, we lose it permanently, along with the federal rental assistance. There is over $350 million in deferred maintenance of our state's public housing. The second part of the bill is $400 million in housing infrastructure bonds to support deeply affordable housing with a prioritization on 30% AMI, both with and without supportive services. A permanent supportive housing is really a great model, but supportive services are not always needed. There is a 65,000 unit supply gap to serve households at or below 30% AMI, 65% supply gap, 65,000 unit supply gap. Deeper affordability does mean deeper subsidy, and the best financing tool to help us get there is through housing infrastructure bonds. Through this financing, nonprofits and other affordable housing developers are able to leverage private financing. For every $1 in state funding, It leverages $4 in private financing. By the way, Mr. Chair, this week is Homeless Week on the Hill. I have one testifier.
Thank you, Chair Houseman. Next up is the testifier, Pastor Kosterman. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Lee and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you today to speak in behalf of House File 1634. My name is Pastor Sue Kesterman, and it is my privilege to serve as the Chief Executive Officer at Churches United for the Homeless in Moorhead, Minnesota. I also have the honor of serving as co-chair for the statewide Homes for All Coalition. Churches United for the Homeless is a 501c3 corporation registered in Minnesota. We have been in existence for 37 years now. We provide safe shelter, stable housing, nutritious food, and a path to healing for our neighbors in need. Like many issues, working to solve Minnesota's affordable housing crisis is complex, but a safe, affordable, accessible home is a necessary foundation if we want to have better education outcomes for our children, healthcare that has meaningful long-term benefits, and places for our growing workforce to live, especially our lowest earners. We can make progress towards meeting Minnesota's affordable housing needs with larger and more predictable investments to help our neighbors and communities thrive. Support for House File 1634 would put $500 million in bonds towards the development and preservation of affordable housing across the state. This request incorporates $100 million to support the preservation and safety upgrades to publicly owned housing, and $400 million in housing infrastructure bonds to support deeply affordable housing with a prioritization on 30% AMI, both with and without supportive services. As CEO at Churches United, it has been my privilege to preside over the construction of the Bright Sky Apartments in Moorhead. The Bright Sky Apartments are owned and operated by Churches United for the Homeless, and they were constructed with the assistance of HIB bonding. The project is 43 units of permanent supportive housing, 22 efficiency and one bedroom units, and 21 units that are 2, 3, or 4 bedroom units. The project opened in March of 2018, and it utilized $5.08 million in bonding, $2.5 million in tax credits, and an additional $365,000 in local contribution, largely from local faith communities and donors in our community. When we looked at the tenancy, the length of tenancy at Bright Sky on its two-year anniversary, we found that in the 43 units, 20 of the units had been occupied by the same household for one or more years, 15 of the units had been occupied by the same household for two or more years. A resident of Bright Sky Apartments, Brian Charlie, testified earlier this week in Chair Hausman's committee about how important his community is to him. Brian was one of the first tenants to move into Bright Sky and spoke at its grand opening. When he spoke earlier this week in Chair Hausman's committee, he recounted how after going through long periods of homelessness, 8 years prior to his moving into Bright Sky, he said that he feels at home now. Everyone deserves to have that feeling, and that is why Homes for All continues to advocate for large bonding investments for affordable housing. I'd like to thank the committee for all you've done in recent years to support housing investments. It truly makes a difference in the lives of so many Minnesotans. Homes for All looks forward to working with both chambers of the legislature and the governor's office to find a path forward to help meet Minnesota's affordable housing needs. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Pastor Kesterman. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Houseman, for bringing this forward. I just want to echo how powerful Mr. Charlie's testimony was in housing. It was a truly moving experience. It brought it to life how valuable this work is and how important making sure that we're investing in housing as we should is. So I just want to add my voice to strongly advocating for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. Chair Houseman, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, nothing else in life goes well if you don't have a safe place to sleep at night. Housing instability affects a child's ability to learn. It affects the health of the family. I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Chair Houseman. So next up is the first of two bills for Representative Hassan, House File 1389. Please proceed, Representative Hassan.
Only if I can unmute myself. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for taking up House File 1389, a shelter housing bonding proposal for a new model here in Minnesota throughout Simpson Housing Services. I would like to thank Rep. Shang for joining me on this bill as a co-author, and I would like to invite other members of this committee to join us. While this is a new homeless shelter model, is going to be in my district, it's something that could change how we care for the homeless throughout the state. We have seen with COVID, there is a larger number of people from the BIPOC communities who are negatively impacted by homelessness. The issue is not new, but COVID has exacerbated the issue elevated it to a new level. For example, in 2018, more than 200 people created a small tent city in Minneapolis called the Wall of Forgetting Natives to draw attention to the seriousness of homeless issue in Minnesota. Simpson was a critical to the response efforts, working alongside with the Native community. Last year, almost every park in Minneapolis was filled with tents of unhoused folks who had no other place to go. Even today, if you go to the Capitol, you will see unhoused folks sleeping in tents around the Capitol area. Homelessness is an issue that impacts inner cities, suburbs, and greater Minnesota. But Simpson and other shelters can only do so much. They can't continue to respond to crisis after crisis. That's where this new model can help. Mr. Chair, here today to tell you more about the proposal and why it's necessary is Simpson Housing Executive Director Steve Horsville.
Mr. Horsville, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Steve Horsfield. I'm the executive director with Simpson Housing Services. Simpson has been operating for more than 40 years, emergency shelter and supportive housing for individuals and families who've experienced homelessness. When we use the current slogan around shelter saves lives and housing ends homelessness, Simpson represents all of that. We we've been doing most of our investment in growth over the course of the last 40 years on the housing side of things in terms of support services for folks who are moving back into our communities. What we've been finding in the past couple of years, however, is that we've got an opportunity to take a new approach as far as how emergency shelter is operated in order for our guests to experience more dignity and in order for us to be more effective in terms of moving folks through this crisis response back into stable housing and community. As Representative Hassan mentioned, some of these concepts we had the opportunity to sort of vet as we operated the Navigation Center in response to a significant encampment in Minneapolis two winters ago. The simple takeaways from those things were that we know that we are more effective when we can operate a shelter environment that is easy to access and is very rich in on-site services, which is exactly the model that we're moving forward. Of course, we also know that homelessness disproportionately impacts Black, Indigenous, and POC communities, and as such, the majority of our guests, the majority of folks that are served through our programs do come from those communities. So we've been doing this work for more than 40 years, and really as a result of the benefit that we get from faith communities and from individual donors, and it's we are now coming forward to the state to ask you to partner with us on what we consider to be vital public infrastructure investment, and really kind of excited to be able to look at this from an equity lens in terms of positively impacting communities that are disproportionately impacted by homelessness. Each year we serve hundreds of folks through our shelter. And this is, as I said, this is all largely riding on the backs of private donors. The investment that we're seeking for the shelter portion of this program is matched dollar for dollar by our private campaign that we've got going on at site at the sites, and then for the full scale of the program that we are pursuing at our legacy church sites, this is actually less than a third, as we've got also a very significant housing component going onto this site as well, and we've got funding sources identified for the housing component of that with Hennepin County, with the City of Minneapolis, and with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. We're grateful to be able to be making this presentation to you today, and thank you for your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a question, but I don't think it's any type of revelation that very little, if anything, works in anyone's lives without housing. And I think it should be one of our priorities this year. I know we've heard a number of proposals, and I'm inclined to support them all, of course, but I'm wondering if the author, Vice Chair Hassan, could repeat the bill number, because I would love to sign on to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Burke. The House file is 10, I believe it's 1389. Any closing comments on this bill, Representative Hassan? You're on mute right now?
I keep just not being able to unmute myself today. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We know shelter saves lives, and this bill is about equity, it's about safety, and above all, it's about serving the neediest in our community. I hope everyone can support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Next up is your bill, House File 1071. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1071, Minnesota has one of the highest rates of home ownership in the nation, but it also has the largest disparities in ownership rates between white communities and BIPOC households. Apart from the historic, systemic, and institutional factors that have contributed to that disparity, it's also amplified by the fact that we simply do not have enough homes on the market to provide adequate, affordable ownership opportunities. The Workforce and Affordable Home Ownership Program provides competitive grants to increase the supply of affordable home ownership opportunities across the state. This bill is part of the Home Ownership Minnesota efforts to secure 30 years of increased funding to develop 500 units of entry-level affordable housing a year and preserve manufactured housing. Currently, less than 4% of all funds allocated to Minnesota Housing Finance Agency are used to develop ownership housing producing approximately 100 new units a year. And less than 2% of the 215 million HEPs allocated have been used to develop entry-level affordable housing or preserve manufactured housing communities. Minnesota has one of the worst home ownership racial disparities in the country, and it's worse now than it was in 1980. There are about 61,000 families of color who could afford to buy a home, but there's no inventory of entry-level homes. There are about 29,000 families eligible to buy homes that occupy rental units affordable for families that are earning 30% of AMI. We know that developing rental housing in many Minnesota small towns is not feasible, but you can build affordable single home, family homes anywhere if we can fund them. With that, Mr. Chair, I believe I have a testifier.
Before we go to your testifier, I know that you have a technical amendment H 1071-A1. Can you just speak briefly to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Sorry, we should have moved that first. This amendment just ensures that Minnesota Housing Finance Agency will allocate these funds to new affordable home ownership programs. We're just changing the word may to shall. That's all we're doing.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hassan. Mr. Washburn, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee.
And thank you, Representative Hassan. My name is Jeff Washburn. I'm the Executive Director of the City of Lakes Community Land Trust in Minneapolis. We are a permanently affordable home ownership provider here in the city. And to date, we've assisted over 430 low and moderate income households into permanently affordable home ownership through over 330 permanently affordable homes. The difference of that 430 and 330 are resales, that we've been able to keep those homes affordable without having to seek additional public sector affordability investments. We've been able to accomplish our mission by creating single family homes, duplexes, townhomes, and condos across the city. On average, the households that we serve at closing, they earn approximately 51% of area median income, and over 56% of the households we serve are households of color. The City of Lakes Community Land Trust is also a member of Home Ownership Minnesota, or HOME. We are a coalition of affordable housing providers that include community land trusts across the state, nonprofit developers, Habitat for Humanities, Manufactured Housing, and the Home Ownership Center. Collectively, we're trying to, as Representative Hassan has mentioned, create at least 500 affordable homes a year, and to do so, it would require increasing the amount of funds that do go toward affordable home ownership here in the state. These funds would augment the workforce housing program, through House File 1071, we're seeking up to $40 million of housing infrastructure bonds to be able to augment these funds. The Workforce Home Ownership Fund was established in 2016, received a one-time appropriation of $750,000, which it's worth mentioning was applied to by 23 organizations seeking over $6 million in funding. It was again appropriated $500,000 in 2019, and a base was established of $250,000. The governor also has $1.5 million allocated in his budget to the agency this year. The fund would seek to fund roughly 50% of any affordable production in Greater Minnesota and 50% in the metro area. I think it's worth reiterating Representative Hassan's comments that the racial disparity in home ownership is worse today than it was in 1980. I think it's also worth noting that members of HOME serve households of color at six times that of the home ownership rate for households of color in their representative communities across the state. So we're doing a good job. We need to be doing a much better job. But I think there are mechanisms in place to start to chip away at this huge disparity that exists in the state. I think it's also worth noting, as Representative Hassan had shared, that over the last 9 years, only 4.2% of the state's annual funding awards for housing production have gone to affordable home ownership, which has equated to just a titch less than $10 million a year on average. We're seeking funds, but it's a relatively small amount relative to what the state is putting into affordable housing production. In closing, affordable housing is a continuum. There are 29,000 renters currently in housing that could provide housing to households below 30% of median income that could buy affordable homes if that opportunity was created. And so if we freed up those units, that would create additional rental units by investing in affordable home ownership. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to present.
Thank you, Mr. Washburn. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hassan, as a realtor, I'm just stunned by this, that we have not, as realtors and as the association also, has not stepped forward on this. 61,000 people in Minnesota can afford to move into their own home, and we have done, in my word, nothing about that. Thank you for bringing this bill. I apologize as a realtor that we haven't done more for the BIPOC community. And you have my word that I will push forward regardless what my future leads, but this is embarrassing. And it leads right to our other gaps that we have in Minnesota. We have to do better. Thank you for bringing the bill.
Representative Hassan, any closing comments?
I can move my screens. This is the problem of having too many screens. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Home ownership is about wealth creation. It's about neighborhood stabilization, and it's about equity. I candidly ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Next up on the agenda is Representative Abaje's House File 1118. I understand that you have an amendment for reference coded H1118-A1. Please proceed, Representative Abaje.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Just to speak to the amendment real quickly, all it does is it updates a drafting error. So we want to add what this bill will do and not take away anything else that's currently in statute. So with that, I'll proceed with describing House File 1118, continuing on the housing train. So this is about providing more affordable housing by increasing the flexibility in housing infrastructure bonds. So this bill would allow the bonds to be used to acquire and rehabilitate what's known as naturally occurring affordable housing for the purposes of preserving it in the market. Under this bill, NOAA is defined as a multi-unit rental housing where the majority of the units are affordable to individuals and families with incomes at or below 60% of the area median income. This would apply to units that otherwise do not receive place-based state or federal government subsidies. As you've heard plenty of times earlier with the other presenters today, Minnesota continues to face a housing crisis, which was with us before the pandemic. And we know that, you know, this type of housing, particularly ones that are already naturally affordable, continues to disappear, putting our low-income families at stake. And we're not building fast enough to replace it. So naturally occurring affordable housing is important because it ensures that some of our lowest income levels have housing stability. We need to ensure that working class people and families making less than $60,000 can live in a home where the cost of rent does not take up 50% or more of their earnings. NOAA units are not only in urban areas, but they're also in the suburbs and our rural communities. This type of housing is crucial to ensuring that housing remains accessible for all Minnesotans at all income levels. Housing infrastructure bonds have been an impactful tool that Minnesota has used to provide more housing across the state. And the type of capital investment in housing has provided Minnesotans with hundreds of homes for more families who are either facing homelessness and need supportive services, seniors, and even some new construction. But when it comes to preserving housing that's already there, we seem to have limited resources dedicated to that goal. And when we lose that type of housing, it harms working class people and often Black and brown Minnesotans who are most at risk of losing their housing to higher rents. And if we continue to let such housing disappear, we will only deepen our housing crisis and it will be costlier in the long run to end it. Housing infrastructure bonds support our housing providers and nonprofit developers with a funding avenue so that they can maintain dignified housing for all Minnesotans. Possibilities that open with using housing infrastructure bonds to preserve more affordable housing will be yet another tool in Minnesota's box to prevent homelessness and displacement across the state. I will now turn it over to my testifier, Mr. Alan Arthur, who can offer additional insight and answer questions.
Thank you, Representative Ajay. Mr. Arthur, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Lee, Representative Ajay, and representatives, I'm here to lobby for this bill and on behalf of the thousands of families and individuals who are living in NOAA, naturally occurring affordable housing, who don't realize that they are just minutes, days, months away from being economically evicted from their homes. NOAA, naturally occurring affordable housing, is the largest source of affordable housing in the state of Minnesota and nationally for that matter. And as Representative Agbaje said, we are losing more than we built in the last 5-year period between 2014 and 2018. We lost more than 30,000 affordable units in the Twin Cities Metro alone. And it's happening all across the state. Over the same time period, we only closed financing on a little over 5,000 units. Again, this is a challenge, a problem that exists across the entire state. And if you can see my screen, you can see a heat map that shows where those are at risk across the state. So let me just get out of that if I can. I can figure out how to do that, which I can't seem to. Oh, there we go. So One of the interesting things about NOAA housing is that 85% of the households are at incomes below 60%. And most startling, the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund research shows that 41% of the households in NOAA housing that they have helped refinance and save are households with incomes at or less than 30% AMI. So these are the households in our community who have the greatest needs, who are at the greatest risk of either losing their housing or having trouble finding it. The demand is so great that investors are buying this housing up and, you know, fixing it up, which it needs to be recapitalized over the course of time, and fixing it up and then raising rents. Folks who are on this borderline, on this edge of economically, if the rents even go up $100, $150, $200, they can't afford to live there anymore. And so we are asking that we preserve NOAA because it's the fastest and cheapest tool available to us to address the housing shortage we have. Almost half of renters across the state already pay 44% of them pay more than they can afford for housing. And so, you know, they're cutting back on food and health care, and it's causing us problems across the state. Just one more screen that I'll share real quickly. And that is this one that shows the rising gap between the maximum cost for affordable rents in our communities and the NOAA acquisition rehab costs. And so we're asking for these funds for HIB to be able to be used to close that gap so that we can preserve more units. AON, the organization I work for, has preserved 3,000 of these units. We are a nonprofit affordable housing provider in the state of Minnesota. We now have almost 6,000 affordable apartments. And we and our peers and others across the state are ready to do more on this front so that we can make a difference in the affordable housing arena. With that, I'll just say thank you for your time this morning, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Arthur. And Representative Bajaj, any closing comments on this bill?
No, just thank you to the committee for consideration. As we've heard already, housing is vitally important. Without it, everything else falls apart. So I urge your support of using housing infrastructure bonds to also preserve naturally occurring affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed to your next bill, House File 1138, Representative Bajaj.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. The second bill I'm presenting this morning is House File 1138. This is a bill meant to provide support for the Firefighters for Healing Project. This is a nonprofit that provides emotional and financial support to survivors of severe burns, whether they be children, first responders, or their family members. This bill would support Firefighters for Healing's effort in developing a transitional healing center for survivors and their families during and after their medical procedures at Hennepin Healthcare. The purpose of the center is to provide a living space and access to therapy for survivors and their families while a survivor is receiving medical treatment. The project will fund the remaining portion of the development of a building and living space in partnership with Hennepin County and will be located near Hennepin Healthcare. Burn injuries and burn trauma are significant issues that can permanently affect lives. Often the treatment required is holistic, from the physical to the psychological. And that rehabilitation can take anywhere from weeks to months and even years. This can cause a financial hardship to survivors and their families. This center will provide a set of resources to firefighters and burn survivors across Minnesota as they recover and adjust to a new normal level of mobility or other changes after their injury. The building that these funds will support will host 12 fully furnished 800 square foot apartments, including 6 fully accessible units and 3 two-bedroom units for families with children. We'll also have program space to complement existing services provided by Hennepin Healthcare, as well as other hospital sites such as the University of Minnesota Children's Hospital, Gillette Children's Hospital, Regents Hospital, Phillips Northwestern Hospital, among others. The center will also host therapy rooms for patients. While the center began as a site for firefighters and children who have survived severe burns, the resources from Firefighters for Healing and this center will also be available to any first responder and open to medical needs outside of burn treatment. This will be the first project of its kind in the United States, and in other places where this type of center has proven successful, they've supplied firefighters and burn survivors with the support therapy, and resources they need to fully recover. With that, I will turn it over to my testifier, Mr. Jake LaFerrière.
Mr. LaFerrière, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yeah, good morning, Chairman. Thank you. Jake LaFerrière, former Minneapolis firefighter, executive director of Firefighters Feeling. Good morning, committee members. I just want to give some context about the organization Firefighters for Healing, the organization was born on an experience that I had serving the community and ultimately given my life almost that day on July 3rd, 2010. So you can see my backdrop in the back there. That's the fire that I needed to pound a window out and jump to safety. I survived this experience and was really transformed by two little children that I met in the burn unit that saved my life. So living through that horrible experience, I figured out we needed to do more for kids that had nobody advocating for them. So we stepped up. Firefighters for Healing was founded. As representative kind of outlined what our mission is, we serve children that are burn survivors, firefighters, and first responders. We do that in a whole host of ways. The one is the housing component I'll touch on, but the other one I don't want to forget about is we provide our own burn camp up in Cross Lake, Minnesota, that gives an opportunity for kiddos with disfigurements to just go be kids. It's proven out over the last 5 years to be a very big first start of healing into their recovery. And then what we've learned over time now after talking, after Camp Red, it stands for Realize Every Dream, came to fruition, we started having conversations with Hennepin Healthcare's docs on what is the next need we need to look for to try to fill? And that was a housing need, which we are doing on a smaller scale today at HQ Apartments. We have 5 apartments. So now our new Transitional Healing Center, after 4 years of hard work, we are shovel ready with this project. A couple of things about it is, even though it's going to be in Hennepin County, this will serve the greater state of rural Minnesota. So any first responder coming to the Twin Cities for any medical reason at all will be able to stay in one of our 12 apartment buildings free of charge, units, free of charge, no questions asked. And so that's the biggest thing that I want to really kind of lay out is it serves the greater state of Minnesota. And also another thing, too, we're coming humbly asking for some bonding support this year. It's crucial for our project to move forward. This will be connected to Hennepin Healthcare for the first time ever. So our families will be able to go Skyway connected over to get the therapies and the ongoing services that they're going to need in the Minnesota winters that we know. I'll close with a heart of gratitude. I've been on this journey for 10 and a half years. We've privately have raised, working towards half of these funds. Our ask is $3.75 million, which will be half of $7.5 million bonding appropriation. And I'll just say that thank you very much for your time. And if there's any questions that we can answer, please feel free to ask. Have a great day.
Thank you, Mr. LaFerrière, for your service. I see Representative Murphy has a question.
Who is going to be your fiscal agent?
Hennepin County.
Do you have that in writing?
Yes.
Mr. LaFerrière?
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Representative Ajay, any closing comments?
No, I think my testifier has really said it all. Thank you guys so much for hearing this out and for your support, and we really hope to see it move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ajay. Next up is Representative Morrison, House File 241. Welcome to the committee. I understand that you have a technical amendment reference code H0241-A1. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And yes, the amendment lowers the asking price for this project. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 241, which would appropriate $800,000 from the bond proceeds fund to the Commissioner of Transportation for a grant to the City of Shorewood for design and construction of a retaining wall, paved trail, and other improvements to provide a safe crossing route for connection with Lake Minnetonka LRT Regional Trail. This current trail is a safety hazard and has been a longstanding priority of the City of Shorewood to improve. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce the Mayor of Shorewood, Jennifer Labadee, to explain the project in more detail.
Ms. Labadee, please proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Lee, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today in support of the City of Shorewood's bonding request. I'd like to thank Representative Morrison for authoring this request on the behalf of the City of Shorewood. I'm Shorewood Mayor Jennifer Labadee. The City of Shorewood is requesting assistance in the amount of $800,000 to improve pedestrian safety and connectivity by constructing a trail in Shorewood along Galpin Lake Road and Minnesota Highway 7 to the controlled intersection at County Road 19. A trail in this corridor has been under consideration for over 8 years, but due to the extremely high linear foot cost and the narrowness of State Trunk Highway 7 right-of-way, among other challenges, the project is cost prohibitive relative to other projects of similar scope. There are presently no north-south trails through Shorewood. There is a trail along Galpin Lake Road in Chanhassen, but it ends at the Chanhassen-Shorewood boundary. The residents in Shorewood and Chanhassen who live in this area who wish to simply take a walk must walk on the edge of a narrow road with no separation from traffic. Unseparated and at-grade vehicle and pedestrian traffic is inherently unsafe. Being unable to safely walk in your own neighborhood has a negative impact on anyone's quality of life. This trail would solve all of those issues. With this project, an 8-foot-wide trail would connect to the Chanhassen Trail and continue through the City of Shorewood and end at the intersection of Trunk Highway 7 and Hennepin County Road 19, a distance of approximately 3,000 feet. Please refer to Exhibit 1 in your packet. I'm not going to try to display them in the effort of saving time. In addition to dramatically improving pedestrian and vehicle safety, the project would accomplish several other goals. First, it would provide off-street access for pedestrians. Second, it would improve area drainage and correct existing drainage problems. Third, it would improve the water quality of stormwater runoff in the area. The existing rate and volume control of stormwater is minimal, and controlling drainage would improve the water quality of Galpin Lake. There are two primary challenges to constructing a trail in this corridor. The first challenge is the narrowness of the right-of-way due to the closeness of Highway 7 to Galpin Lake. Because of the narrow right-of-way, a significant retaining wall will need to be constructed between the highway and the lake to provide a safe route to the intersection so that pedestrians can safely cross to Highway 7 to downtown Excelsior and Excelsior Elementary School. Please see Exhibit 2. A second challenge is the wetland located at the right-of-way at the south end of the corridor. The location of this wetland will make it difficult to design and construct a trail with minimal wetland impacts. Please refer to Exhibit 3. Both of these factors significantly impact and greatly increase the cost of this trail project. Because of the significant cost of this trail, the city has been actively seeking financial support from outside agencies and organizations for financial assistance to construct this trail. We have contacted the Met Council about the availability of a parcel that they will not need upon the completion of a project this summer. Additionally, the City of Shorewood was notified earlier this year that we were awarded a planning grant from the Safe Routes to School program. This planning grant, however, only provides the city with funding to develop a construction plan. It does not provide money for actual construction expenses. The residents of this neighborhood are very engaged in this process. They have appeared before City Council. They've created a petition in support of this trail that was signed by over 300 residents. And they've written to Representative Morrison and Senator Osmick, urging their support to include this project in a state bonding bill. The City of Shorewood supports the efforts of these residents and supports this bonding request. In conclusion, the bonding project request will allow the City of Shorewood to construct a trail that will give residents a safe place to walk or ride a bike. It will provide better pedestrian access to Excelsior Elementary School
and the Excelsior Business District. However, without your financial support, it is unlikely that the City of Shorewood will be able to afford to construct this safe pedestrian and biking trail. This trail will benefit residents in Shorewood, Excelsior, and Chanhassen, and it will ensure the safety of residents by providing pedestrian and biking trail where one does not currently exist. Thank you, Chairman Lee and committee members and Representative Morrison for your consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mayor Labadie. Seeing no questions, Representative Morrison, any closing comments?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present this much needed bill for the City of Shorewood.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. Next up is Representative Bernardi, who has two bills, House File 1567. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. With us, I have a special guest today from my community, and I'm pleased I will introduce him shortly. But New Brighton has railroads in the community since the late 1800s. We are proposing a bonding project that other communities have been funded in bonding bills in the past. We have two regional rail operations in New Brighton with as many as 10 train trips per day, CP Rail and Minnesota Commercial. Operation times is not restricted and customer based. The trains travel 10 miles per hour. With 11 at-grade crossings, complaints regarding train horn and whistle noise have come in from across the city in neighboring cities. The northmost crossings impacts over 12,000 people in multiple communities, as well as the south crossing impacts over 8,000 people in multiple communities. The regional, the railroad requires to blow their horn starting 20 seconds prior to the crossing, approximately 440 feet at 10 miles per hour. They are required to blow two long blasts, a short blast, and another long blast through the entire crossing. It is at 96 to 110 decibels. A vacuum cleaner is at 70 decibels. And what that means is it's 110 decibels is 16 times as loud as a 70 decibel vacuum. In 2014 and 2018, an evaluation proposed improvements required to become a quiet zone, minimum half a length apart, are reduced impact with wayside horns. Closure of a crossing for quad gates, two quad gates with a medium. And so there is a number of things that need to be done to make these whistle-free zones in our community. Minnesota Commercial has been engaged, and Ramsey County and other groups are working with us. At this time, I would like to introduce you to Craig Schlichting. He is with New Brighton. Thank you.
Mr. Schlichting, please identify yourself for the record and proceed. Mr. Schlichting, you're on mute, or we can't hear you right now. Please proceed, Mr. Schlichting.
Thank you. I apologize for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Craig Schlichting. I'm the Director of Community Assets and Development in New Brighton. In addition to what Representative Bernardi said, I'll kind of expand on that. Can you see my screen?
We can. Please proceed.
As mentioned previously, railroad has operated in New Brighton since the late 1800s. At that time, we had a lot of different uses. We had pole yards, packing houses, ice houses, stockyards. Today, we're the home of about 23,000 people. As mentioned, we have surrounding communities that are also impacted by these railroads serving our community. There are two railroad operators within our city limits, CP Rail and Minnesota Commercial. And we do have 11 at-grade crossings. For a community of our size, that is quite substantial. We did look at options for this, and we've been to this committee in the past. A quiet zone started in 2014. We updated in 2018, and we're here today to present updates to the prices for 2021 costs. So what is a quiet zone? A quiet zone is an exemption from Federal Railroad Administration authority, which requires trains to sound their horns at a particular crossing. A quiet zone may have several grades within that crossing, as they are established based on a half mile limit. As mentioned by Representative Bernardi, here's kind of a map of New Brighton, and the two circles shown on that map are encompassing the 12,000 individuals on the northern end of our city and 8,000 folks on the southern end of our city that are impacted by those specific crossings. Moundsview, Arden Hills, Roseville, St. Anthony Village, Fridley, and Columbia Heights are all impacted by train noise within our community. To establish a quiet zone, you must have a minimum of a half mile length. You have to include safety measures that decrease the risk of said quiet zone. And to do so, you either close the crossing, add additional grates, or add medians in combination with gates. House File 1567 requests $3,085,000 for quiet zones established at 11 at-grade crossings within our community. Included in your packet are a bunch of pictures kind of showing the individual crossings. They vary from just a stop control to gates. The reduction in price that we had from a previous request are based on localized costs that were incurred for highway safety improvement projects. At this specific crossing shown on your screen now, there was a fatality in the past, and we identified that as a critical project that we need to take on prior to any other involvement. Included with that project are median islands and the gates that were referred to. So when we look at the different quiet zones within our community, yes, there are 11 at-grade crossings. To establish them within the half-mile corridor, there would be 7 separate quiet zone areas, and this screen shows the individual costs for that. Some of them are as simple as adding a median and delineators to prevent folks from bypassing the crossing arms and unsafely crossing said railroad, but others involve adding additional gates and safety measures to the tune of $3,085,000. As mentioned additionally, we had 4 other communities that were successful in this bonding request in 2014, Shoreview, Eden Prairie in 2017, Rosemount in 2018, and Goodview in 2018. With that, I thank the committee and members accordingly.
Thank you, Mr. Slichting. And seeing no questions, any closing comments, Representative Bernardi on this bill?
Well, thank you for hearing us and helping our community and the region be able to address this issue and to keep our community safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Please proceed to House File 869.
Thank you, and I appreciate being here, as I mentioned to you before. This is House File 869. And it is a bill seeking $3 million in state bonding aid to supplement local funds for a pre-design, design, and engineering of an overpass spanning at the North Town Rail Yard in Fridley. I want to get your bearing straight here of what where I'm talking about. If you use 694 coming from, on the west side, it's the area of like North Minneapolis and Brooklyn Center. And if you go over the river to the east side, it's the Columbia Heights and Fridley area, and it moves you over to the St. Paul area. And if you drive during rush hour, you will see that it's very, very congested in this area. And I just watch the news in the morning, and to see how many crashes you hear about in this area on 694. I don't know if you know this, but Fridley is home to the largest railroad yard, not only in the state, but from the Mississippi to the West Coast. It's Burlington Northern Santa Fe's Northtown Rail Yard. As the current pandemic has further demonstrated, a streamlined supply chain, including freight rail, provides enormous benefits to all Minnesotans. Fridley is honored to play its part by hosting the rail yard that supports the railroads, working and providing essential goods throughout the region and state. However, the Northtown yard does create some serious challenges to Fridley community and to the entire region that House File 869 will go a long way towards correcting. I want to let you know that BNSF has granted their initial approval. As well as want to point out, this is a huge equity issue. If you go south of this area, there are in the Minneapolis area, you will find numerous crossings close together. This is several miles before there is a local crossing. And it's a huge equity issue as well. And my testifier will talk more about that, but I do want to highlight that, and we'll wrap up a little bit more about that at the end if needed. So with that, I am going to ask you to call on our council member in Fridley, Stephen Eggert.
Council member Eggert, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee and committee members. I'm Stephen Eggert. I'm currently a member of the Fridley City Council, and previously I served for 9 years on the Fridley Housing Redevelopment Authority. I'm also a long-term resident, having moved to Fridley with the opening of Interstate Highway 694 in the early 60s. One of the top issues for Fridley is the amount of traffic the metro area funnels through Fridley. The friction for the local traffic traveling east and west, the amount of local traffic using 694 to cross Fridley, and the regional traffic accessing 694 at this point. Intersecting Highway 694 are three major corridors: Highway 47, University Avenue, Highway 65, Central Avenue, and East River Road running along the river. For a brief history, the vision for this project started years ago with city officials and the community. Timing for the overpass is the critical piece, and these pieces are aligning. Briefly, in 2009, the Fridley Comprehensive Plan identified the overpass as a project need. In 2012, the East River Road Corridor Study done by Anoka County recommended the overpass at 57th as a priority. In 2018, the city obtained a dedicated right-of-way with a development at the East River Road connection. Two small pieces on the east end are yet to be obtained. However, they're very doable, very small, and we have cooperation. In 2019, there was constructive engagement finally starts with the Burlington Northern, and this was critical to the entire process. Basic concept plans were developed and agreed to, and at that time, the Fridley HRA approves $800,000 for the project. In 2020, Fridley completed a feasibility study. As Representative Bernardi stated, we have this major rail yard, but we also have a major regional utility corridor going with the rails. Timing, studies, and feasibility have been completed. We've got the county recommendation. MnDOT has also weighed in and acknowledges the need. However, the overpass is not in their right-of-way. And there is positive engagement with the railroad, which, as many of you know, is very important. So the city, the county, and the railroad are on board with this project. I'd like to summarize some of the benefits for both local and regional benefits. And I'll, hearing a lot about affordable housing, I want to say that Fridley is a well-developed and mature suburb, and we have a significant amount of affordable housing. This overpass will connect a concentrated area of poverty to grocery, employment, and transit options. There's no local crossing for several miles, a couple miles to the north and to the south. This will provide a safe crossing for pedestrians and bicyclists and reduce public safety response times. On the regional level, significant congestion will be relieved on Interstate 694 with Highways 47 and 65. As Representative Bernardi knows well, this is a traffic pinch point on 694, which is fully developed. The overpass will connect a regional and national trail system, And it will also improve traffic flow for commercial and industrial businesses based in Fridley. You may not know, but as a suburb, Fridley is home to a large number of commercial industrial businesses. They provide many jobs as our population, about 27,000. We've also see that this overpass will be a direct benefit for over 40 businesses. I want to thank you for the time to speak on behalf of this project, and thank you for your consideration. Happy to answer any questions.
Chair Bernardi, any closing comments?
Well, thank you very much. And our City Council member, Steve Eggert, did a great job in summarizing this. And just want to point out that on one side of this bridge, that it is an area where the median household income is $39,871. Compare that to the metro average of $94,300. So it's really important that people can be able to move about and have freedom, whether they own a car or not own a car, so they can be able to bike and walk safely, be able to access food and not live in a food desert, and be able to have access to jobs. So thank you very much for your consideration of this bill today, Chair Lee and members.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. And that's the final bill for our agenda today, members. Our next meeting is Tuesday, March 16th at 8:30. We'll be hearing water infrastructure and flood mitigation related bills on an informational basis. And having no business before us, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.